but that's the old me. Out in, out of my windows, roll down. 'Cause I don't care anymore, said I don't care.
Let's go. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you are having a great Saturday. Hope we can make it even just a little bit better by bringing you up to date on everything that's going on in the world of entertainment and pop culture. Joining me to do so, as he does so very often, please welcome from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube, Jeremy Branch.
If you are hearing this broadcast, then you survived Friday the 13th, and we're so glad to have you here, folks. We've got a packed show that we're going to talk about. I mean, we've got topics just stuffing this thing full. But before we do get started, we're here. We're halfway through October, which means we are deep into spooky season, people. If you are fellow lovers of the horror genre, then we got a ton of stuff that we're going to talk about here in this opening segment. Julio, when it comes to horror franchises, there are two that started in the early 2000s that are long-running franchises that don't usually come up in the conversation of best horror movies. I don't know, maybe for younger people they do, but the two that I'm talking about in particular are Final Destination and Saw, which we've got a 10th Saw movie in the movie theaters right now. I haven't had a chance to see it yet. In fact, I've never seen the sequels to either of these films, so this October I'm catching up on both of these franchises. I'm going to be doing a review for them a little bit closer to Halloween. But do you have thoughts on these franchises before we move into a couple of other franchises that have kind of reared their ugly heads lately?
I have not seen any Final Destination movies, so I probably need to fix that at some point. I know there's a lot of actors I like in several of those films, so I should get around to that, but I haven't. I know some of the iconic things from the franchise, but I haven't actually like sat down and watched one.
Yeah.
Saw, I watched the first one and hated it and haven't ever watched another one. I will point out that the new one is getting the best reviews of the entire franchise.
Crazy, right?
So, you know, maybe there's something to that. I respect that character has become iconic, that the Jigsaw, although Jigsaw I think has been dead through several of the movies. I know this current one is like a chapter, I think 2.5. Because it goes back to while Jigsaw was still alive. But I mean, the later movies are, you know, Disciples or Copycats or whatever. So, you know, I don't know how much of that you put on Jigsaw and how much you put on the iconography of the traps and the puppet and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I mean, you know, I respect that it is a long running franchise that I guess is beloved by some. I just didn't think that the first one was as smart as it thought it was.
Yeah, that's fair. It is like a kind of a cover song of a David Fincher movie like Seven.
Yeah, and I just, again, despite there being a lot of people who I really like in these movies, just I never felt like I needed to go back to it. Like the first one just annoyed me so much that, and I'm just not into the torture porn of it all either, to be completely honest with you. It's just,
so yeah. Superficially, I feel like both Final Destination and Saw, and this is coming from an absolute diehard horror fan, I feel like Final Destination and Saw were so predicated or so the gimmick was coming to watch people die, where right. Something like Scream, you're kind of going to watch people survive and figure out the murder mystery. I feel like very nihilistic franchises where audiences are going to just watch people get dispatched, and I get it, there's fun in that, but so those are just two franchises I was thinking about.
I think Scream might low-key be the best horror franchise.
Yeah,
and that's an opinion
right there with you.
That's an opinion I've come around to very recently, freely admit that, But the overall quality of the six films that we've had so far, it's pretty strong. It's pretty consistent. The series tends to be smart. It tends to keep you guessing. It has good mysteries to it, and not just and Ghostface isn't this supernatural force. He's, well, for one thing, he's not the same person in every, spoilers.
Yeah.
And he's just, he's not, you know, infallible and invulnerable. And I
would
just...
Would you say that the Scream franchise is even better than, I don't know, something iconic like The Exorcist, which, you know, started with William Friedkin's seminal 1970s horror classic that recently we had a new adaptation coming on? Would you put those up against each other?
I mean, if you're asking me if The Exorcist is a better movie on its own than any single movie in the Scream franchise, then I'd probably say yes. If you're asking me if The Exorcist franchise is better than the Scream franchise, then the answer is hell freaking no. Because there's
what
only
happened,
one...
My guy, what happened?
There's only one good movie.
Yeah.
It's that simple. And it's not a concept that lends itself to continuing. If you want to have a demonic possession exorcism movie, there's lots of demonic possession exorcism movies that don't have to be called The Exorcist. There's not enough mythology there. There's not enough mythology there that even if you bring back characters from the original movie, as this new movie did, there's no compelling reason to necessarily revisit those characters. It's not like Laurie Strode. It's not like, you know, where there was a compelling reason to revisit, you know, Jamie Lee Curtis's Laurie Strode in the Halloween franchise. It's not like, you know, it's not like the killer is so iconic that there's a compelling reason to go back to that character like there is with, say, Jason Voorhees or Freddy Krueger or Ghostface or Michael Myers or Leatherface, you know, some of these other icons, even, you know, Chucky or Pinhead to lesser extent, or Candyman, you know, I mean, you know, there's a mystique around those characters that I don't think that there's a character. I mean, it's, I guess, the devil. Okay.
So
it's the devil. Okay. Well, there you go.
Well, there's some news that came out. Talk to me about the specifics. I think the studio, first tell me what studio, and they spent like $400 million to resuscitate this franchise.
Yeah, Universal and Blumhouse paid $400 million for the rights to Exorcist. And there's a lot of backpedaling going on because, like, oh, we made this movie for $23 million and it came out and it's, you know, it's just about made its budget in the first week, which, first of all, you have to make three times the budget of a film at the box office to break even. But let's put that aside. You know, during the run, they should make that. And that would be fine if they hadn't also paid $400 million for the overall rights to the franchise and to make three movies. Now they're backpedaling and saying, well, no, it's not just to make those three movies. It's for other rights. It's to be able to do, you know, the haunted house at Halloween Horror Nights that they've got going on right now, and to be able to do, you know, merchandising and yada, 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 and all these things. And, you know, it's not like each of these movies has $136 million tacked on to whatever we spend to make the movie in order to break even.
But
come on.
Kind of.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
And they're not going to make that. And it was a stupid buy when you could just make a demonic possession movie and call it anything, and you still would have made as much money.
They come out every year. They cost nothing to make. And
there's been at least four
audience,
this year.
They do fine.
There's been at least four this year. You had The Nun 2. You had The Pope's Exorcist. You have a great one in theaters right now called When Evil Lurks that is amazing.
I got to watch that.
Yeah, and then you got this Exorcist movie, and I think, you know, I think I'm probably missing one in there at least. So, you know, it's like making a zombie movie. You don't need to go out and license the George Romero Living Dead. Just make
That's
a zombie
a really
movie.
Good point.
You don't have to go out and license The Walking Dead. Just go out and make a zombie movie. You know, I think that's where they made the mistake. I think they put too much weight on this brand, and it's not a weight that this brand really supports. Got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And quick shout out to our friend Mike Eveland, who mentioned back at Pensacon Halloween Fest last weekend that he has been listening to the show regularly since we've returned as a podcast. And that's right, you can get this show as a podcast if you didn't know that already. Just check wherever you get your podcasts, and we actually usually do go up just a little bit earlier than we go on air. We usually go up Friday afternoon before airing on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620 on Saturday afternoon.
As you pointed out, means they might not have yet survived Friday the 13th if they're listening to their podcast.
We'll give them the benefit. We'll give them the benefit of doubt. They got through at least half of it. But I appreciated hearing from somebody who listens to the show. We don't get to hear from folks that often. So, if you ever do have some feedback on the show, feel free to reach out to Jeremy or I if you know us and see us in public, or you want to track us down on social media. I think we're both pretty locatable. Or you could always email me at gopensacola@gmail.com, and you can get me that way too. But appreciate it. And Jeremy mentioned, Mike mentioned that we've been having some issues with the sound levels, with the music being a lot louder than the talk. So made some adjustments this week. Hopefully we've taken care of that. Hopefully the music's a little bit lower and the talk's a little bit louder, and we're balancing that out a little bit. But speaking
Thanks
of balance.
For the advice, Mike. We're going to yell from now on.
It's not that kind of show. but speaking of balance, let's talk about the balance of the force, which is hanging in the balance right now as we've come to the end of Ahsoka on Disney Plus, which we haven't really talked much about on the show. I think we've mentioned it in passing a few times, but we haven't done any kind of really in-depth analysis of the show throughout the whole 8-episode run, which is now over. So I wanted to spend some time talking about the series and where we're going from here, I think is the other thing to talk about with regards to this, because it is, kind of a tapestry. There is an overall story being told here that goes beyond just what's happened in these 8 episodes of Ahsoka. And I think that these 8 episodes of Ahsoka really, in a lot of ways, continue to tell an overall story that for some of us, we may have been coming in the middle of the story.
All right, look, to this point, I want to bring this up because I'm really curious about your take on it. I'm somebody that has watched Clone Wars and seen Rebels, and on that side of things, I was able to track and follow what was happening. One of the criticisms I've heard about Ahsoka, though, and I'm curious about the validity of this, is that you kind of just get dropped into the story without knowing the characters, which I would contend has always been Star Wars MO. Like, we didn't know Luke Skywalker until we were introduced to him in a story that was already every story you get introduced to characters. So what do you think about just that observation? How do you feel about it being followable without all of the context before from those animated series?
I think it's not necessarily an unfair criticism. There has been a lot of referring to this as Rebel Season 5.
Fair.
And I think that's fair because even though the series is called Ahsoka, she wasn't always the focal point of the series.
Mm.
And I think the series spent as much time focusing on Sabine Wren and to a lesser extent Ezra Bridger as it did Ahsoka, and also some of the other characters, Thrawn, and you know some of the villain characters. But above and beyond that, yeah, it does kind of throw you into the deep end. But I would remind people that Star Wars A New Hope was episode 4.
That's a really good point.
And
yeah.
Even though there were no other movies made before that one, we were coming into a story that was already 4 episodes deep. So, you know, being thrown into the middle of a Star Wars tale is nothing new. Did it take me a little while?
Like unless chapter 1 starts with the birth of your protagonist, you're always thrown into the middle of a story.
Yeah. Now, did it take me a little while to catch up with who some of these characters were and what their relationships were and what they meant to each other? Yes. Did that limit my enjoyment of the show? Not once I got up to speed. No, I thought the show, I enjoyed the show a lot. I know I'm not necessarily, you know, I don't speak for everybody here. I know that, you know, that my wife did not get into the show. Like she just gave up after like 3 episodes. And that's weird for her. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not an unfair criticism, but I also think it's one that you can get past and really enjoy the show. I did really enjoy the show overall. I thought it was a good story. I think there's a lot of things that are hanging at the end of this, but I think that's intentional. So, how about you, Jeremy? How'd you feel?
You know, I like the Rebels crew. I like that storyline. I thought it was a little bit interesting that they didn't put the big tanky guy that was introduced in Mandalorian Season 3 or 4.
I think his name is Zeb.
Yeah. It was interesting to see him kind of show up for an episode of an unrelated series and then not in this. However, to your point, you know, they've still got a lot of story that they can explore within this. Great casting, just awesome casting. I really enjoyed the interpretations of everybody from Ezra to Thrawn to the Night Sisters. I think Ray Stevenson was probably the standout. I don't know how much my perception was affected by the tragedy of losing just such a great actor, but he made an impression and just a really interesting character every time he was on screen. I still kind of feel like this story lends itself to the animated medium, and I don't think I necessarily liked it more for being live action than if it would have actually been Season 5 of Star Wars. And to a greater point in a conversation that you and I will have today and inevitably for the rest of time, I believe that Star Wars and other serialized storytellings like the MCU, not to get too specific on that, but they're both going to risk isolating fans. To a certain degree, it is okay to get dropped into the middle of the story, but when things are so dependent on having seen the previous television series, the previous movies, the previous animated series, it gets to be nearly impossible to come into it with fresh eyes and to be a new fan. So it's almost as if bringing in new fans in this current format is going to be really challenging. And that's why I am, you know, concerned about the future of Star Wars.
Well, that's interesting because I agree to some extent, but I also think that doing this in live action versus animation expanded the audience for this material. There are some people that are just not going to watch an animated series. They're just not. Mm-hmm. They think animation's for kids, and they don't, you know, and they're not going to get involved in it. So I do think that this show definitely brought new people to these characters and to this overarching story. And this overarching story is going to blend in with the other things that we've seen in live action. And that's kind of leads to where I wanted to go with the rest of this discussion, where without really any spoilers, where we're left at the end of this series is very much not a stopping point. Like, to some extent, it just kind of ends. Like, there are some major changes for some characters, and, you know, they're sent off in these directions. But we know, to some extent, where we're leading here. We know that Dave Filoni and Jon Favreau are leading up to a movie, or possibly now I've heard it might be more than one movie, that are going to tie up everything that's been done in the live action series that they've worked on. So not just Ahsoka, but Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett. There's a forthcoming series called Skeleton Crew that's going to factor into this as well. Where what we have been told, or what has been out there so far, is that we're going to get Skeleton Crew, we're going to get season 4 of Mandalorian, and then we're getting a movie. Or possibly, again, more than one movie that's going to bring all of these characters together and tie all of this together. My question is...
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
My question is, I'm concerned that that's all we're going to get before a movie, because it feels to me like I think we need another season of Ahsoka before we have a movie.
That's a valid point, and
because of where these characters are left at the end of this season,
is that potentially the kickoff point of the see, I'm confused on exactly where the timelines are, but I definitely see where you're coming from. Maybe we pick up and Ezra's got the lightsaber and now we're off to the races. Like you said, it's very open-ended at the end, but I feel like I'm curious how the stew tastes. Like, I know we've had some tasty ingredients, but when you look at what Favreau and Filoni have done collectively, do we still love it? Do all these ingredients come together to make a stew that's, like, pretty tasty, or is it just, like, kind of bland? I don't know. I'm not as in love with it as I feel like some people are about Favreau and Filoni. I don't feel like the sum of those parts quite adds up to the potential that they had.
I'm assuming that that's not a subtle Carl Weathers is in The Mandalorian making an Arrested Development baby, you got a stew going joke in there.
If it was, I would have been so much more clever, Julio. You know that.
Now, I still love it. I have a lot of faith in these guys. I'm eager to see where they're going. I'm very eager to see what this movie is going to be. A lot of people think it's going to be some kind of adaptation of the book Heir to the Empire, which would be really interesting to me. And maybe if they make it a trilogy, a adaptation of the trilogy of books. We'll see where it goes, but we've got to take a break. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Nihilist channel on YouTube. And today's broadcast is not brought to you by McDonald's, although it might sound it might sound like it from that. But there's a reason for playing that beyond just 80s nostalgia. And that is because we're gonna get into a larger conversation here, but we're going to start the conversation by talking about the return of Loki.
Diabetes.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah. No, that is a whole other issue. We're going to talk about the return of Loki on Disney Plus. So Loki is back for season two, going back into the MCU. And I don't think it's too much of a spoiler to say that 80s McDonald's plays into this series, because we've seen it in the trailers. But there is a scene in this first episode set in a McDonald's in 1982, and my God, if you were a kid in the 80s, I think you could probably smell that scene, just the way they reconstructed what a McDonald's was like in the 80s, the menu and the uniforms and the seats, and it was just like, wow. it was pretty stunning.
Little revisionist history, not to include the styrofoam trays that were used to hold the burgers in them at that time, but far be it from me to criticize.
Yeah. I didn't notice that, to tell you the truth, but we didn't see a whole lot of the food, so it remains to be seen, because I think we're going to revisit this McDonald's over the course series. So, because there are definitely scenes in the trailers that we have not seen yet, but we are back with Loki. We're picking up basically right where we left off of at the end of season one.
Yeah.
And I don't really want to get into too heavy a spoiler discussion of this. Of course, there is the second episode is out already. Neither Jeremy or I have seen it yet. I think we're both planning to try to watch it this weekend. And I'm sure we're going to continue to refer to this series throughout its run. I think it's just good to see these characters back, first of all. I really enjoyed season one of Loki, and I'm really looking forward to where the story goes from here, because I do think that this story probably has more repercussions on what's going to be going on in the Marvel Universe than anything else. But above and beyond that, I'm interested in these characters. I'm invested in these characters, and I want to see where they go from here. And not just the characters that we already knew. We get to see, Mobius come back. We get to see, several characters, but we get to see several new characters too. Best of all being our buddy Ke Huy Quan as OB, being a new character added to the series this season, who is just so much fun. And just so fits that I cannot think of a better match of actor to character. He comes across like a grown-up Data from Goonies.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
I loved what that character brought. So how are you feeling about having Loki back?
Yeah, I agree with what you said. Loki is one of those early Marvel Netflix series that Disney Plus series. One of the they had the first little run of them. I feel like WandaVision and Loki stood shoulder above the other MCU television series so far, and that's not so much a slight to the others, just high praise for those two. They had a really interesting tone. So to go back to the TVA, that real specific set design that was,
the Atlanta Marriott
in the Loki world. Yeah, absolutely. I love it. It really, like you said, it's almost like it didn't miss a beat. It just picks up right where the other one left off.
Yeah, it very much does. I mean, we're starting out like instants after the end of the last episode of season one. It's,
And Ke Huy Quan is, like you said, it's so good to have him back in movies and on television. So, like, I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm eager to see where it goes. There's also the thing looming in the back of all of our minds about where the Kang stuff is headed, and I guess we just got to kind of ride and see what happens,
Yeah, I mean, I'm a little bit less worried about that. I mean, I think it's a factor for sure. But I'm kind of more interested for the short term of where this ride of this series is going to take us. I think this... I think when the MCU is hitting on all four cylinders, it tells a complete story within the project that also feeds into the larger overarching story of the universe. And I think that that's been something that's been a little hit or miss lately.
Absolutely.
And I am hoping that we're getting back to it here now. I know, and this kind of leads more broadly into the overall discussion that I want to have about some things that are going on in the MCU. A few things that have come out in the last few days or that have been discussed in the social media world and the YouTube world, etc. One is that the enthusiasm seems to have died down. And I think some of that is because they just shoveled too much stuff out at once. I think that the quality of some of it may have suffered to some extent. I don't think as harshly as some people think it has, but noticeably. I mean, there are peaks and valleys throughout the last couple of years of Marvel content. And I think that that's led people to kind of lose interest, even in a character like Loki, who's been a core character in the Marvel Cinematic Universe since almost the beginning. Thor was the third movie or fourth movie in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I think it was fourth, because I think Iron Man, or fifth maybe, because you had Incredible Hulk in there too. But I believe Iron Man 2 came out before Captain America and Thor, and I don't remember the order of which those two came out. I think Captain America came out before Thor, but I might be wrong. This has been a character that's been central for a long time and is very much beloved, and an actor that's very much beloved. And yet I'm seeing, Screen Crush put out a video earlier this week, kind of expressing concern because their videos covering that show are getting about half of what a typical Marvel Universe video used to get. And they weren't just looking at their own metrics. They were going and looking at other YouTubers that cover these shows regularly and finding that their metrics were way down too. Now, it could be that people have just are still interested in the show, but have lost interest in like burying themselves in all the minutiae. And so they're not going and watching all of the recap and criticism videos that come out up in its wake. But this is following, several series where people have been kind of complaining and the audiences haven't been quite as big. And, we had an Ant-Man movie earlier this year that audiences were kind of lukewarm on. Now, Guardians 3 did great.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got the Marvels coming up. I think this puts a lot of weight on the Marvels. And I'm just wondering, does it feed into the overall superhero burnout, et cetera, et cetera? One more thing I want to throw at you before I ask you for a comment on this, Jeremy, is we've also had the news this week that the in-progress Marvel series Daredevil Born Again, which has been very eagerly anticipated and was announced as an 18-episode series, put on hold like everything has been by the strikes that are going on in Hollywood right now. Or we're down to just one strike, but still, we've got the strikes happening. In that time, the Marvel brass have looked at what's been shot and decided this isn't working. And so the news is out that they had shot less than half of the first season, so less than half of 18 episodes, so less than 9. They're going to go back to the drawing board and start over. They're going to try to use some of the footage they've shot already, but there's been whole episodes of the show that have been shot that we're not going to see because they don't feel like it's good enough for us. So with all that in mind, Jeremy, go.
In a world where they let Ant-Man Quantumania hit the theaters, they're saying Daredevil Born Again is so bad that they can't release it. That's a scary thought. I thought Quantumania was fine. It was pretty mid, and the fact that the McDonald's theme from 1982 is ironically called You Deserve a Break Today, the lyrics in it, it to me, man. And, you know, we touched on it in our conversation about Ahsoka and Star Wars in general. It gets to a point where it's just, it's not special anymore. It feels like such a, it's been commodified to the point that it almost feels more like an obligation than like an escape. It feels more like we are having to maintain this breakneck pace, because the minute that that momentum breaks, the attention economy will move on to the next thing. And that says a lot about society as well. You know, there's this very, what have you done for me lately attitude about things. And it feels like, because there have been a couple of misses consecutively with some really good stuff in between, that the consensus of Marvel has changed drastically, though I don't know that the quality of Marvel has changed drastically. Like, there's stuff that I like. Guardians 3, great example that you mentioned. It's the most successful superhero movie of the summer. One, probably the best superhero movie of the summer. I can't think of any better. So it's not as if audiences are totally checked out on it. But you make a really good point. Maybe audiences are more checked out on listening to a bunch of... Oh, this is bad. I should have caught myself before I said this. Maybe they're just tired of hearing people talk about it as much and delve into, you know, delving into 30 different analysis and explain videos about what each of the different little things within it, you know, happened. And
well, if that's the case,
entertainment news is different.
Yeah, if that's the case, we're in trouble. So maybe we better take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. We've got Jeremy Branch with us on the line from the Pop Culture Analyst channel on YouTube. And what we're trying to figure out, Jeremy, is everyone still holding out for a hero, or at least a superhero? Or are we burned out at this point? Is the world ready to move on to something else?
All I know is it would be terrible if you and I got stuck talking about movies like Killers of the Flower Moon. That, I mean, what world would we be living in where we had to talk about master filmmakers like Martin Scorsese?
I mean, I am looking forward to seeing that movie next week. I'm not going to lie to you.
It looks
very much.
It looks incredible.
Yeah, and some early buzz for Lily Gladstone to win an Oscar for that, which, you know, anybody involved with Reservation Dogs winning anything is okay in my book. But
absolutely.
Yeah. But back to the point, you know, we're kind of talking about, has there been overload, you know, or are people just tired of superheroes? I don't necessarily think people are tired of superheroes, because superheroes have been around for getting close to 100 years now. And, you know, they may wax and wane with their popularity, but yeah, I don't think they're going anywhere. I don't think we're going to stop seeing superhero movies or superhero TV shows. If nothing else, we know there's already a lot of stuff in the pipeline that they're not going to just completely scrap. unless you're Warner Brothers, in which case it's entirely possible. But yeah, you know, still would like to see that Batgirl movie there, Zaslav. You know, I don't care how bad you think it was. I'd like to see it. But anyway, independently of that, you know, there are some indicators that things are not so great in superhero world, not just with the stuff that's going on with Marvel and the things being brought down a little bit. And I think some of that too is, you know, there's still like some hangover from COVID. There's a lot of people that just have not gone back to theaters, period. You know, so that's a factor in there too. But you look at the performance of the DC films this year, none of them have performed up to expectation. And yes, there's some other factors in there. There's the all of the baggage that Ezra Miller brought to The Flash. There's the fact that there's a question of whether these films matter at all, knowing that we're getting some kind of reboot in the DC universe. And we got some more news in that regard this week too, in that there's a report from Variety. And I'm mentioning this kind of with one hand tied behind my back here, because I don't like to necessarily mention unattributed reports. However, if it's coming from a major source like Variety or Hollywood Reporter or Deadline, you know, the trades, that sort of thing, I put a lot more weight behind that than just, oh, I'm a dude with a blog and I heard this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, if the, in the course of an article that they put out this week that was talking about the forthcoming Aquaman and the Lost Kingdom, which is coming out in about a month and a half, and talking about the troubled production of that film and the challenges that it's faced, and et cetera, et cetera. They drop a bomb in there that nobody is coming back from Zack Snyder's Justice League casting. So we already knew that Henry Cavill was out as Superman. We already knew that Ben Affleck was out as Batman. I don't think anybody ever believed that Ray Fisher was ever going to be Cyborg again after everything that happened with him.
No.
But we still had question marks on Ezra Miller, although it seemed unlikely that he would return. And more importantly, on Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman and on Jason Momoa as Aquaman. Now we're seeing this report saying none of them are coming back and that Momoa is in talks to play Lobo, which is a different character, which actually may be a character he may be more suited for, to be completely honest with you. I think the idea of him playing Lobo is a good one, but it gets into this whole, well, now have we just kneecapped this Aquaman film? You know, is there no way that this movie makes any money? Coming off the first Aquaman film being the biggest moneymaker for a DC film, period, over all of the Batman films. The biggest moneymaker is the first Aquaman film. So, you know, if that film comes out and bombs, and yeah, there are extenuating circumstances, but still, This should be a no-brainer for this movie to come out and make money. So what happened? Yeah, there's also, you know, some baggage from Amber Heard in this movie, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, I just don't know what to think here. So, you know, are we burned out on superheroes? Are we burned out on the same old and looking for a fresh vision? You know, I go back to, again, Guardians 3 made money this year, but Guardians was a singular vision. It was part of the MCU, but it was maybe the only thing in the MCU that was allowed to just kind of be its own thing. And the guy that did that was James Gunn. What's James Gunn doing next? Oh, he's running the entire slate of DC films after Aquaman. That is going to be at least a soft reboot. And we know there are some actors continuing in roles. He has said that Zola Maragueña will be back as Blue Beetle. He has said that a number of the actors from his projects that have taken place in the DCEU will continue. But we know that there's a fresh start coming. and we know it's coming from somebody who's got a pretty good track record so far. So is there going to be excitement for James Gunn's Superman movie, or are we just burned out on superheroes totally and nobody cares anymore?
Well, important to consider that people are not a monolith, right? So some people are already burnt out on superheroes. Other people will be ride or die until forever, because, like you said, there's 100 years of legacy, and these characters are very beloved to certain audiences. I feel like Batman will always be successful on the big screen. The original Aquaman, that's a really interesting kind of case study, because it felt like all of the stars just aligned for that movie. Who would have ever thought that that would have been the one? It wasn't the best. It wasn't the most popular character. I think we've been in an era for a long time where stars alone, as in Jason Momoa, as much as people love him, I don't think an actor alone is enough to support a franchise. And we've seen that time and time again, where you can put a big star in a movie and it not necessarily do the kind of numbers that it would at another point in time. So, like, it was such an anomaly, and I don't know that you could recapture that lightning in a bottle twice. The term fresh start, I get where you're coming from. I think it's incredibly valid, but I don't know that the monolith that we're referring to as audiences, does it carry as much cachet as it might to the more attuned to the industry side of things? And I think that's a great question for you. Do you think that a fresh start in the DCEU means that we wipe our hard drive of all of the projects that have come before? Or is there still like an aftertaste of all of that?
I think it's a lot to overcome. I think it's a lot to overcome for both DC and for Marvel right now. Yes, fresh start. But more importantly, you got to give the people what they want, something they want to see. You have to give them a reason to say, I've got to see that. I am hopeful. Yeah. I am hopeful that if Marvel gets its train back on track, that people are going to say, yes, I want to see that. And I feel like by the time we get to another Avengers movie, that's going to happen. I think no matter what else has happened in the interim, you put that Avengers label on something and people are going to be like, oh, I got to see that.
And is that the meter of the temperature of general audiences more than anything else? When the next Avengers movie comes out and it performs incredibly well, then we can assume, hey, things, there's still hope that this could regain the momentum that it had. Or if it does poorly, then that means there's very little chance of recovery?
I do, but I think, again, it's a case-by-case basis, and it's show me something I want to see. I think that if James Gunn brings what I think he can bring to DC, I think people are going to be excited about DC again. I think if Marvel can get back on track, people are going to be excited about Marvel again. And when we get to the overall superhero fatigue question, I just want to point my finger also at a great series that's on Amazon Prime right now, Gen V, which is a spinoff of The Boys, which is also a great series. And I don't think I've heard anybody say, oh, I'm sick of The Boys. I want that to go away. It's very much a series that takes place in the superhero world, albeit a sardonic look at a superhero world. But
which might be a key difference.
Yeah, but I mean, this still seems to be thriving. There seems to be an audience for Gen V. I sure hope so, because the show is fan-freaking-tastic, and I absolutely recommend that you watch it. We're going to talk about it more in detail in the future when Jeremy's had a chance to get caught up on it. And we'll be talking about lots more things in the future, but we've got to go for today. It's been great catching up with you guys. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.